When the world is ruled by violence and the soul of mankind fades, the children's path shall be darkened by the shadows of the neon maniacs.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast and an all the horror episode featuring I Love This, You Should Too, who bring the Neon Maniacs to Riverdale, Gargantua Cast, who shows some monster love, and Drinking and Screaming, who make us a cocktail, and so much more. Welcome to the show, Sam Stepanenko.
Please don't get me wet. I don't want to melt.
I know, because water does have that effect.
It apparently yeah. does. On Neon Maniacs.
On Neon yeah. Maniacs. Trish Coughlin, everybody.
Hey, everybody. Yes, yes. I love neon, and I'm a bit of a maniac, so this is right down my alley.
This is a weird one, and of course, we couldn't have a little weird without Jeff Omega.
Man, I don't know how I functioned without having a video camcorder eye before.
Very 80s, this movie. We were talking about Neon Maniacs from 1986-ish, because it sat on the shelf yeah. for almost 2 years before ever getting released. So that helps with the dating on this. Made 84-ish, maybe even 83-ish. We're going to get into it because this is an example of when movies go wrong. To be honest, any time a movie is made, it's like a small miracle happens. Everything has to align right to make it work. And trust me, having been on set before, if something could go wrong, it will. And it yeah. certainly happened with Neon Maniacs. And
but it is a small miracle in its own right that it works at all.
Yeah.
Because it strangely does work.
Kinda. Did everybody have the same kind of reaction to this movie like I did when I get to the end of this movie? And I know Sam did because we were practically in sync watching this unintentionally. And we were texting back and
a lot,
forth.
Actually.
Yeah. Like literally we were like within a minute of each other.
Yeah.
Not having coordinated. And this was crazy. We get to the end of this and we were both like, what the fuck did I just watch?
Yeah. Yeah.
I wanted that was weird, but I didn't know it was getting that weird.
It was fun yeah. weird. I mean, this is not a good movie, but it was so much fun to just watch and absorb. As you said, this movie is more 80s than the 80s were.
Yeah. Yes.
Right. Like it's because it was so it was fun to watch, even though some of the music was painful.
Which hopefully we can fix because, yeah. you know, I was hoping yeah. for more of a rock and roll punk vibe to this movie.
Yeah.
Kind of like watching Trick or Treat. Go listen to our episode on that way back in the classic archives. And I was kind of looking forward to some of the music and we didn't quite get it. A little bit in the battle of yeah. the bands, it was a little bit better there, but the music as a whole in this movie was kind of awful. But I guess they were going for the cheapest stuff they could buy.
Yeah.
Or borrow.
I really thought that the opening theme and the closing credits theme, it's like a vaporwave anthem.
Yeah, I don't know. The music as a whole, I felt, didn't mesh with the movie, but so much didn't in this movie. So much didn't yeah. make sense. And I was oddly okay with it not making yeah. sense.
It's because the movie was relatively unfinished.
Yeah. It seems like they wrote stuff that never got done.
Yeah, this is technically an unfinished movie. They had so many production problems. They ran out of money partway through, had to come back 3 months later to shoot the rest. They lost the actors, a good hunk of the actors anyway, that were the monsters, so had to reapply the makeup to new actors. And you could see a lot of, like, the development of the love story in here, quote unquote, ish.
Yeah.
Rather than the monster stuff so much, because I don't think they just had the time or the money to finish that stuff, which is a shame because that's the more interesting stuff. Who doesn't want to see a bunch of monsters raging on San Francisco? Like, this is great. If you're a horror fan, on paper, this sounds fantastic. Nothing heady about it, but it sure sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, I wanted more maniacs.
Yeah.
Except for the lizard thing with the one eye, because that just looked bad.
Initially, this movie was supposed to have 27 maniacs. Yeah. And budgetary constraints brought that down to 12 plus the little lizard guys that were called scavengers. There were two of those. Man, and what were these things? I've seen them referred to as kind of village people, and then I told Sam when we were texting back and forth, I'm like, these look like the shitty G.I. Joes you would have melted in the yard.
Yeah.
And this is the result, is like these half melted G.I. Joes.
Yeah, but I think the village people reference is oddly accurate, just because, I mean, you do have some of those tropes in there. And I was actually thinking that before you even said it. I'm like, oh, there's some village people stuff happening there. And they were still relevant when this movie was started in 83, 84.
Sure.
They were still, right? So I could see them sort of going with that and going, hey, this is a fun poke at pop culture.
But now we've got kind of these neon maniacs doing cultural appropriation, and some of it does not look very good.
when you mentioned it was like some sort of like G.I. Joe thing, the whole time I kept thinking like they're off-brand Hellraiser Cenobites.
Yeah, these are like they're not even G.I. Joe so much as like these are what you would have found in the dollar store.
These are the action figure adaptation of the characters from Nightbreed.
Yeah, the Hank Sola, and then the Nightbreed, and Punhead, and just nothing that's right. Like the Transmorphers, like it's just not the right. It's not the brand name.
No.
So let's talk about the maniacs. You got Samurai Guy, Bike Man.
I've actually got their technical names here. We have Ape, who got a lot of screen time.
Yeah.
I liked Ape, actually. I thought that was... When I saw Ape, I was confused as to what their origin was. I thought these were all dead people, and then I saw the lizard eye, and I'm like, I don't know what's going on there.
You know?
I have a theory that I'd like to do, but we'll get to that when we get to that.
Yeah. We got Archer. Nice. We got Axe. Guess that kind of makes sense there.
It's the guy who looks like Toxic Avenger.
Yeah. Decapitator. Doc. He was the one who would have looked like the surgeon. Hangman. He ran around with the noose. Juice, who threw electricity. He was certainly the most powerful one of the bunch. But kind of sucks being an electric guy and being weak against water. Doubly so.
Yeah.
Mohawk. Ooh, that one was a rough cultural appropriation. He was the Indian character. Punk Biker.
Nice.
Samurai. Definitely looked like a samurai. He was kind of the coolest one, to be honest. Slasher and Soldier.
Slasher must have been the guy with the hook.
Yeah. So they don't even have cool G.I. Joe names. They're so on the nose.
Mm-hmm. Juice was actually probably the most creative of all of those names.
I suppose, yeah.
Yeah.
Because they could have gone with Electro or Electrode or something like that. But yeah, Juice, there's a bit of a creativity in that one name.
Yeah.
One. Just one.
Just one.
Just one. Yeah. See, and the Doc is my inspiration for where I think I'd like to see this go in some ways. Because I said to Jay, I said, this kind of has sort of a Frankenstein's monster mutant vibe thing to it, where somebody's creating these monsters. And I mean, it was done kind of in House of a Thousand Corpses, but I'd like to see some of that maybe. Like,
I swear they,
an origin.
They got all their clothing stuff at a Halloween costume store.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
You know, which could be fun.
Yeah,
I want to lean into Halloween with some of this, where it's people don't know.
Yeah, well...
So the guy finds the book with the photographs at the beginning of the movie.
Oh, the cards, the trading cards.
Yes, I'm like, wow. So these were supposed to be other dimensional beings who got their own branded trading cards to lure some fishermen in with this skull that was propping the door open. That was like the opening scene. Fisherman, no fish, comes off the pier, sees this cow skull, and under the cow skull are these giant trading cards of the Neon Maniacs. And then off camera, he dies. And then we roll the credits after there was a narration before that. But it's crazy. Like, I'm like, okay, I think I know what I'm in for. Already, this doesn't make any fucking sense. But it shows that there's some sort of pop culture attitude towards these Neon Maniacs, or at least counterculture. They think they're cool. They're kind of meant to be like this punk biker gang, I think, in a lot of ways. In the original script, they're supposed to be from another dimension. That's vague. We don't know. But I'd like
that to... That was definitely missing from the story.
Yeah, I'd like to play with some of the stuff that was intended, or that we can infer out of this. It's a little strange to pick a place to live as San Francisco, living under the Golden Gate Bridge.
Yeah, with the water.
Yeah. With the water.
Yeah, yeah, that was what bothered me the most. This is, okay, we got to get rid of this whole, like, water as a, a weakness in things, because everybody knows Earth is, like, just full of the damn stuff.
Well, see, I do have a theory here that we can, I kind of want to just play with the elements, because this was an unfinished film, and I kind of just want to finish it. Okay, so they're from another dimension. They don't react well to the things that are here. Maybe their dimensional portal was stuck in this one spot. So they are stuck there as far as that's going to be their home. They have to protect this spot and hide it, and they don't have a choice but to be here, because this is where they crossed over, and this is their gateway back home. So, okay, now we've made that make sense. It's not in the movie.
No, there's not a lot that does make sense in the movie.
I mean, at the end of the movie, I guess it was in their hideout inside an old ambulance? I don't know.
You know, I would almost say because they're maniacs, my throw in the hat theory would be that for every different generation of humanity, they're like the most brutal killers of their time from where they're from. And it's the spirits of all of them. Yeah. But that also includes spirits from the future, because they're interdimensional.
And that's along the lines I was thinking, Jeff.
Another dimension. Yeah. That's kind of what the vibe I got.
Yeah, because like with the samurai, I just got the feeling that like, no, this was like a dead soul that now just does this shit. It's stuck.
I was toying with an idea, and feel free to shoot it down, because I kind of dig yours. But these dimensional beings who didn't have a physical form, maybe something similar to what they would have had on wherever they're from, but had to inhabit human bodies. And they did this during Halloween, which is when they're stuck in these stupid outfits. And then we get those archetypes of, because that's what that person was dressed as at that time, because that's what they possessed, and that's their clothing, because that guy was dressed as a clown or whatever, and we could have fun that way.
That sounds like a Buffy the Vampire Slayer episode. It does. I mean, they actually did an episode like that where people were turned into their costume. I'm not saying I don't like it. I think it's fun. I mean, there's nothing wrong with stealing an idea from somewhere else and making it unique.
Okay. I didn't think about that. I just figured that was not so much becoming their costume. It was that's the costume. That's what they were wearing when they took this person over.
And that's the new take on it, is because that's the costume. That's what they look like.
Yeah.
Okay. And if we do this, I have one request, that we need an astronaut. I just think that would be funny.
Sure. Awesome. I think we need to keep this
if he was the most brutal killer.
Yeah, and he was a brutal killer. And because he's in an astronaut suit, he's not as bad off as the other ones when it comes to
Because he's
water.
Fully covered. I like the idea of them. I kind of want them to still have a physical form when they come through. Like, I kind of envisioned them as psychic vampires, which is why they're tormenting their prey first, is trying to get this emotional level out of them. Maybe they do feed on them, because they do pull the corpses. They're never found. So maybe they are food as well, physical food as well as emotional ones. That's an energy that kind of powers them. Maybe? I don't know.
Or they're trophies. I mean, if we go with the idea that they're the most brutal warriors, and this is almost like a rite of passage, they bring them as trophies, kind of like the predators do, where the skulls and remains are displayed as badges of honor.
We could get,
or you could have it where they're all brought back to basically their rough base area, and they basically feed off of the collective strife of their workers who are trying to power their technology to get their gate back open. But they're also psychically feeding on them as they're being held captive under the river.
That actually brings me something else I want to cover, because they were after this character Natalie for a good portion of the film and lose complete interest after she inappropriately decides to have sex in the school lab while they're being hunted. So yeah. Maybe there's something about virginity, which is a horror movie trope. And I kind of want to embrace the tropes in this a little bit, keep it in the 80s. Yeah. That's part of the fun of this is I think they were trying to recognize some of that. And it was like, well, we're not sure what to do, so we'll do it all.
I was saying to Leah when we were watching it that actually about halfway through, I was saying it's so strange that because it feels like a movie that you would see now where it's like, written by a computer. They fed 1,000 slasher movies into a computer, and then it wrote a script, and it was polished off by Aaron Sorkin, and now it's a movie. That's what it feels,
Okay, let's give our audience a taste of this movie by running the trailer, and then we'll be back to really get into what Neon Maniacs is all about.
You're telling me that these things are inside the Golden Gate Bridge. One. Two. That they only come out at night. That they're responsible for the death of 15 or more kids and 3 of my police officers.
Let me ruin your evening, the stranger said to me. Your new lover is my old lover. She said,
come on, Sue, it's quiet.
They think they're going to live forever.
What are you doing?
Come on,
get
out.
You want to play with us? You want to fool around?
But they're in for a terrible surprise. Now, there are 12 new reasons.
Over here!
To be afraid of the dark.
After me.
And every one of them is a killer. Introducing, in diabolical order, Axe, Hangman, Doc, Biker, Slash, Juice, Samurai, Mohawk, Archer, Soldier. These are the Neon Maniacs. They live so others may die. Neon Maniacs.
All right, Neon Maniacs from 1986 by writer Mark Patrick Carducci. And he actually co-wrote another movie that we've covered on the show in episode 108.
A favorite of yours and mine, Pumpkinhead.
Yes. Love that movie. One of the best creature effect monsters still, as far as I'm concerned. Wish at least one of the maniacs looked like that. That would be great. An unlimited budget, we would have got something way cooler. This is directed by Joseph Mangin, who directed Smoke and Flesh. These were the only two movies he did. After the Neon Maniacs, he moved back into cinematography, which is where he started. And because they had lost their cinematographer along with some of the actors after that 3-month gap, he actually had to do double duty as cinematographer and director. Another gut punch on this film, unfortunately. But he's done quite a few horror movies as cinematographer. Alone in the Dark, Alligator, Squirm, I Drink Your Blood. He was the director of photography on the Swamp Thing television series, the 90s HBO one, not the newer one. And he's actually done quite a few of our episodes that we've covered. We covered episode 41.
Sword and the Sorcerer.
That's right.
You told me.
That's right, I did. Episode 87.
Mother's Day, also, and, because you told me.
Yes, and one more that I told you about, episode 196, where he was the camera operator on
Q.
That's right.
Which I still really, really loved. I love that episode. It was one of my favorite episodes we've done because it was just so weird. Just like this one.
It really was. That was shot in a very quick fashion as well. Yeah. And go listen to that episode because it was a good one. This stars Lavani Sorrell as Natalie. She was actually in Basic Instinct. Clyde Hayes, who's actually credited as Alan Hayes in this movie, and he was in Friday the 13th, the final chapter. Donna Locke was Paula. This was her only movie, which is bizarre because I think she was maybe one of the more talented ones, despite the fact that her character was weird. Like, here's this clearly maybe 18 to 20-ish playing what? 8 or 9? A 12-year-old boy? I don't know.
I was thinking 13 or 14.
Yeah.
Definitely playing much younger than she actually was. And it really made that sort of, the three leads, really odd because she looked of an age with them when you felt like she was supposed to be younger.
Yeah, which I would fix. Just make her the same age, be done with it, and the same school. Simplifies things quite a bit.
I went the other way, and I actually cast somebody younger to fit the role. But
that works too. Either way. Victor Brandt was Lieutenant Devon, and he's more known as a voice actor these days, and most people would probably remember him as General Grozier from Metalocalypse. David Muir was Wiley, and apparently he's known as Dr. Hackenstein. Marta Kober was Lorraine. She was in another Friday the 13th, part 2. P.R. Paul was Eugene. I had to write this one down. He was in a movie called Snowballing. I'll just leave that there for you.
All right.
Jeff Tyler was Wally. He was in the 2000 adaptation of Dune. Amber Dennis Austin was Lisa. She was in My Tutor and had a recurring role in the second season of Hunter, if anybody remembers that show. Actually, it was just, looks like one episode, season 2, episode 18, if you want to find her. She didn't have much of her career either. James Acheson was Ray, and he's actually been in a couple of movies we have covered on this show, episode 119.
Strange Days.
And
the cop in the bathroom.
That's right, he was. And episode 194...
Invaders from Mars. He played the cop in the bathroom. I think he did play a cop, but it wasn't the cop in the bathroom.
That's quite like a specific part, right?
Yeah.
That's a very precise niche.
It is very precise. You know who, there's only one person who could play the cop in the bathroom.
Get me the guy who plays the cops in the bathroom.
Chuck Hemingway was Gary. He was in episode 142.
This one, Trish and you did together. This was my science project.
Yes. Bo Sabato was Manello, and he was in The Flamingo Kid in 1984. Jesse Lawrence Ferguson played Carson, and we actually talked about him maybe briefly in episode 200.
Prince of Darkness. Yeah, he was one of the homeless people, if I remember correctly. He was like one of the zombie homeless people. Because I recognized him as soon as I saw him. I'm like, yeah, because he had a lot of screen time in Prince of Darkness.
John Lafayette was Thomas, and we may have mentioned him just a couple of weeks ago when we covered
Fright Night 2. He was in the original 80s sequel.
Gene Bicknell was Cozy and was in The Warriors. Matthew Asner was String Bean, was in a movie called Femme Fatale. And that pretty much covers it. Yeah, we got multiple people playing these monster parts, so I'm not going to get into them because we'll be here all damn day. And we got some guests to get to.
And some remaking and some things that we need to talk about.
Oh my gosh, do we
ever. I have some pretty crazy ideas for a remake, actually. Well, I think we all do.
So let's get into some of the wackier parts of this movie. Now, this movie, like I said, opens with a fisherman dying, and then we are introduced to a big group of people, unsure who the lead's going to be honest. The character of Lisa seems to be getting a little more screen time than anybody else, but dies along with the rest of the gang, with the exception of Natalie, as they party in the park. Some are getting down in the bushes, and others
they're
are playing
all
games.
Getting down somewhere in the bushes.
Yeah.
Or
yeah,
right in the middle of the field.
And I think this was meant to show like Natalie was the more virginal character, hadn't hooked up with anybody, but there was a scene just prior to that where Steven had met them when they were picking up the booze and was walking his dog. So we kind of established that Steven has a crush, but hasn't made a move on her as of yet. So yeah, Neon Maniacs attack, everybody dies, and then there's a lightning strike, and then all the Neon Maniacs disappear because, oh no, Reed!
Yeah.
I wasn't sure what happened there, to be honest.
I didn't either. There was a light, and I didn't see anything else happening.
Yeah, we maybe would have just stopped. Yeah, if we would have got like a thunder crack or something, and maybe some rain in the following shot.
Yeah. just a hint as to what was happening, even if they don't explain it till later, at least then you would have been able to tie it back. But yeah, it was baffling. I thought it was just the cops showing up.
Could be a boom tube.
Boom tube. Very Kirby, Kirby reference there. But yeah, it was bizarre as to what the fuck happened there. And they still have to make their way back. And they were carrying a lot of corpses along the way because cops arrive and there are no bodies to be found.
None there's, whatsoever.
But there's goo. There's, that's a very 80s thing. Goo.
Yeah.
Neon goo. I guess that's where the neon part comes in. It's the glowing blood of the Neomaniacs, or just some goo that's left over from them being there.
Yeah. Some
well, there was a lot of sex.
Okay, but Sam, if you are having sex in orange or green goo, you should see someone.
Just stop drinking Gatorade.
The Neomaniacs literally had a doctor on their team.
Yes.
To make sure stuff like that doesn't happen.
Absolutely. That's right. Oh, dude, you're neon purple. You should be a neon green. This is, no, we need to get
very
you on all human girl diet.
Yeah, lay off the grape juice.
Yeah.
Lay off the grape juice.
Terrible, terrible. Now, you would expect this would be very traumatic for Natalie. Like, horrible. She just saw her entire circle of friends die. Her parents are off gallivanting around the world or whatever, having a vacation, getting away from their kid. But mainly because we couldn't afford to cast them, most likely, because we have 12 makeup projects and two weird lizard creatures to pay for.
We have to pay for the pool.
Their biggest problem was that they didn't try to get any sort of an action figure licensing with this movie.
Come on.
It was the right time.
Licensing was never going to happen for this movie with all the problems they had. This one,
because this would have been around, this was 84, 85.
They would have been shooting this around 84. Well, it wasn't a case of, like, they got to get this movie made before they can ever merchandise it and sell anything. But, I mean, you could tell they were shooting for franchise and they were trying to pick all the little tropes from all the movies that kind of made them successful. And maybe if this would have been finished properly, we would have got that. But I don't know about you guys, but, you know, if all my circle of friends, if all you guys died, I'd be very upset, moping around my house and I'd be for at least a couple of days. She stripped down to her bikini and then hopped into the pool, took a swim, went to school the next day.
Yeah.
No big.
Like, even when her friend comes, she's very lackadaisical. Oh, thanks for coming. What?
Yeah, there was no emotional arc there at all. None. Zero. Zilch. Nada.
No. And I would, that's something you got to put on the director. It's like, come on, man.
I had a weird concept with that, with Natalie and sort of the reason that they wanted her, and it wasn't virginity. It's the fact that she's kind of a bit of a sociopath.
I love that. Yes.
I dig that. I work with what's within the movie here. I really think that's hilarious.
That's why she doesn't feel anything. She's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, and that's why she's a virgin too, because she's just not interested.
No. Oh, okay. Now that gives me some more things to build on. Maybe we only had three or four maniacs initially come through that dimensional portal, and then the rest were just built by people they've killed, like their spare parts.
Ooh. That's what I wanted the doctor to be.
Yeah.
Love it.
Right. That was my whole thing because the doctor, he looks like a mad scientist, right? And so I thought, play with that. Have some fun with that, where he's not the leader, but he's the creator. Like, his role is to make more.
Yeah, because at one point they're trying to escape the maniacs and on the subway and the bus, and they manage to take off one of the arms of I don't know which maniac, to be honest. And later on we see the maniac and they make note that his arm was back on. So they can put their shit back on, and they're kind of like these zombies and intelligent zombies and can swap out parts or reattach parts, and that's all kind of pretty cool if you think about it. It's just too bad we didn't get to see it.
Yeah, exactly. You could have a lot of fun with that, where they do start to like swap out parts.
Mm-hmm.
So you see your astronaut guy with like a lizard arm or something like that. Like, sorry, my mind went blank on an idea there.
Love
but
it.
But yeah, you have them sort of swapping out parts to suit their needs.
Yeah.
Yes. It's so much like action figures.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So maybe they are still after the emotional energy, but they're using all of the resources. The rest are for parts to build new maniacs. Like, prepare. They're building themselves a little army.
Yeah, you could see the maniac army growing throughout the movie as you progress.
Yeah, and how much more horrible would it be to see your deceased friends kind of mixed and matched on these bodies?
My head on Trish's body, yes. Totally. My tiny little head.
Oh, yeah.
That's really good.
That would be so funny.
That would fuck up Jay so hard.
You'd be looking at your own tits.
Probably. You would at the beginning, and then you'd be like, these are so in the fucking way.
Yeah, probably.
Anybody want these? I'll trade you a big pair of boobs for a semi-automatic machine gun.
There we go.
But it's got to be
tiny feet.
But I would love to see, like, one short arm, one, like, bodybuilder arm, you know, yes, big,
exactly.
Long arm.
Like, you want them completely disproportionate and looking very mutant-like, I think.
Yeah, and sometimes just using, if they don't have the raw parts, and we can have some fun visually speaking. I don't know if you've ever seen Frankenstein's Army. They had some very inventive creatures there, but using crutches for legs or something and arms just to walk around, and we could have a lot of fun with that.
Absolutely.
It's like Shane Black's, well, even though I didn't like it very much, Shane Black's the Predator, his concept of the Predators going around and upgrading themselves with DNA from traits that they liked from different species. So, like, not that, but I like the idea of this band of interdimensional beings going around and, like, upgrading their parts all the time. Exactly like what you're talking about.
Yeah, and I like Jay's idea, too, where, yeah, they don't have enough parts to make a whole new mutant. So, yeah, they're made out of, like, you have somebody with, like you said, a crutch or a ladder, sure. Right?
You know, it's like they're the underling servings, like servants. And then when, if they, like, lose an arm, then they can take one from one of their underlings. And then it's like their backup limbs for body parts for self-repair.
Yeah, and they earn the right to become more complete when they kill something, kind of thing.
Yeah, maybe they have a lookout when they're attacking somebody, and it's just this body mass, but it's full of eyeballs all over its body.
Love it.
Scout.
Yeah.
But when you talk about replacing parts, I also want, at a certain point, one of the victims, like, it's a jogger, but they've got one of those prosthetic legs that really kind of are pretty awesome. And that's when the maniacs see it and they're like, holy crap, this is awesome.
I kind of want the ones that can, like, I want them to be armed with these makeshift.
Armed.
Yeah. But I actually want them to have an umbrella weapon, because they're afraid. They're living in a climate with that it can rain at any time. I want them to all have umbrellas it just makes sense.
I was wondering if you wanted to play around with the concept of something like, so obviously, you know, when they start at the beginning, there's water around, and it's not a concern. But it is a concern later, but the only real difference is that time has progressed, and I wonder if you could play around with the concept of they have to fulfill a certain quota of something in order to sustain all of the elements on Earth and our dimension, and if they don't, then they become more vulnerable to more and more common elements in our dimension that's not present in, you know, dimension X where they're from. If that makes any sense.
It makes sense, yeah. It's just, how do you convey it is the problem. And that's always the challenge, is when you're doing a visual medium, is how do you convey these really interesting theological concepts?
Well, I was thinking Well, when I was thinking about this, and I kind of wanted to give it an environmental slant too. Like, maybe we could change it so much that the rain can hurt them and maybe does melt them, but maybe like a polluted city like California, they're a little more in California, could be more resistant to it because it's of the pollution in the water, in the rain.
Yeah.
Now, more pure sources would be a definite problem for them.
Like tap water that's being treated and purified.
Yeah, and as far as this Dimension X thing, we could literally have energy flowing out of this portal into whatever constructed body. This is how they're bringing over more people, is by constructing more bodies for their new maniacs.
And that toxic energy is what gets broken down by the purified water.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of where I was going, is, yeah, like their dimension or planet or whatever it ends up being. It is like, it's a very toxic atmosphere. Like it's acid rain and toxic chemicals in the air. Like it's just, and that's normal to them. So this pure air is a challenge for them.
Mm-hmm.
And which is why they end up in San Francisco or California, yeah. Because it, I mean, I don't know if it's like that anymore, but California did have a reputation for being quite smoggy and having fairly toxic air. So it does play, especially in the 80s, back when that was a thing.
And having some sort of environmental message, or underlying message, subtly, so just helps the horror work a little bit better. I mean, I think horror with a message has always been successful, mm-hmm. somewhat. Maybe it's, and we can see this now from their standpoint, this is a survival of the species or an extension of the species into a new world. For them, they just see us as cattle. It's not evil so much as this is instinct. They are smart, but it's more instinctual for them. They're feeding on the raw emotion and they're using all the resources. It's more than we do when, you know, we kill an animal.
Yep. Yeah.
But they are maniacs.
Well, from our point, they would be maniacs, right? Like, well, that's a human term.
True.
Yeah. I like the idea of a slightly empathetic villain. I've always enjoyed that, especially when you're bringing up a character that's kind of unique. This is, we're almost bringing in the Frankenstein's monster thing again, where the monster isn't necessarily the villain.
So you're doing like small soldiers kind of thing.
That's just a matter of perception. We can still, I mean, they're doing horrible shit. It's going to be horrible to the audience. Yeah. But if you look at what they're doing on to their perspective, that's just what they do. They're just hunting. So
they're procreating.
Yeah.
They're trying to it's survival of their species.
Yeah.
So it's beyond hunting, right?
Yeah.
It's,
we're not going to try to not make them look villainous and gross.
Of course
we
not.
Want monsters ravaging the city. That's what we want. And we can have a big climax that this movie never got because it never got finished.
Speaking of the toxicity, this is something that kind of is just sort of occurring to me. I'm just trying to construct it in my head and make it make sense. Whereas you talk like the more toxic the water, like the better they can handle it. But also some of the parts of the people, like you'd have the vulnerable people, the drug addicts, they might be fighting for those parts because they're toxic parts and they're just better able to take on those ones than anybody who doesn't do anything bad to their body.
Oh, I could say I'd love to have them like actually pulling parts off each other, fighting over like some sort of steroid junkie.
Yeah.
Because he's big and buff and he's toxic. Yeah. That juice. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, how does the guy get electricity powers and nobody else has that? Like, as far as I could tell, he was the only one that had a weird power. But we could make that one of the more pure guys that had crossed over. And maybe there's a little bit more, like, that's an actual physical form. So we could have something really fun with him. Because it's got to have some starting point, right? There's got to be a couple of them that cross over that have their forms already in place. Well, otherwise, how does it start? Like chicken before the egg problem.
Yeah, well, yeah, you have, I think, the doctor and maybe the Juice character who is a pure being, and a few others that are soldiers who are in progress.
Yeah, I'd say your core would be about four or five people.
Yeah.
Now, you could say that it's something where it's like an ancient benevolent evil that, you know, spreads by getting into more and more beings, and this is a growth of something like that. But
it's a pandemic.
They come to the Earth dimension because all of the most horrible serial killers and people on the planet were like these beings where they inhabited Earth people as like ways of testing the water on our planet or something. And but that could also play into your idea about being possessing people during Halloween as well, but also still play into the idea of them being possibly, you know, all the most vicious killers.
Was there like a prominent serial killer in the 70s or 80s in San Francisco around that time? Because that would be interesting if you could use something like that, where somebody's been, like a killer has been executed and they're using that body as a starting point.
To be fair, there's a lot of serial killers that were operating and we only kind of know the big names.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, Bundy was 70s and 80s. And he was traveling.
And he was East Coast, though, wasn't he?
He traveled all over the world or all over the country. Yeah, I'm not sure if he made it into California. Oh, but
the Zodiac Killer was from San Francisco.
There we go.
Hey, I kind of like that. And
which
boy,
actually, in the Zodiac Killer, we never found, and he has a crazy costume.
Oh, wow.
Oh yeah. If we could use the crazy costume with the Zodiac theme. At one point, I was actually thinking, like, okay, maybe we have, like, because they originally wanted 27. I was thinking, well, how many major arcana are in the tarot cards? I think it's about 22. So I was kind of toying with that because I wanted to try to incorporate those cards at the beginning.
Well, this could play into what I was thinking, where I was thinking about something where there's all of these like ancient archetypes that are all kind of in existence at like the dawn of man, but it's like, you know, pretending that we're in the 1930s and we can talk about history as like the biblical dawn of man, but it's like the biblical dawn of man. You find out that, you know, stuff like Elijah in the Bible, where he gets, taken away in a golden chariot. That's actually, you know, he's actually not a great person. And it's like he's being basically sucked up by these beings to join their killing brigade. And then all of these different, you know, people throughout history who have been seemingly abducted, who might be, may or may not be good people, are all just people who are being abducted by and assimilated into like these ancient archetypes who are trying to like grow their, you know, their years of, you know, whatever it is, toxicity across the galaxy or, you know, across the dimensions, as is popular these days.
Well, this could be interesting where the Neo Maniacs maybe have always been here, and maybe that portal opens up every few cyclic in nature, every couple hundred years or whatever. So some of them have been here for a while waiting for that portal to open again. And
well, there's,
when that gate is open, that's when they need to create the enough bodies for those who pass through.
Well, what if it's when certain environmental conditions are met? Because we've already established that's a concern, right? Because when you think about places like ancient Rome, which got very polluted for a while there, so you could have events sort of that,
the industrialization of Europe.
Yeah, exactly. There's all those sort of events where the earth became more polluted, and that's when they sort of pop up. And it was, as we progress in our polluting of the planet, then we have a whole environmental message here as well, right? Is that pollution is bad, you bring monsters. So you could do that. And then that's why they've come to 1980s California, is because that's when they were sort of in their environmental crisis.
Yeah, 1980s California, and they're like going, well, we still have what's left over from all the lead gas that we had earlier.
Exactly. So it's kind of explains itself that way and feeds into what we've already established.
Nice. Now, I kind of want to keep the Battle of the Bands, but I want to make it a little more a public thing, like a very open Battle of the Bands, like instead of a school, or do it in like a big park or whatever, so it attracts a lot of people. I mean, we don't get that, we'll have to change that, but we won't get that scene of them escaping into the lab and having sex. But
you could have it on like an internationally televised, so I know you could say a reality show, oh, that's lame, but you could do it in a cool way.
It's the 80s. The reality shows didn't really exist.
But they did have music shows. They did have, like, concerts and live music.
Yeah, it could be like an MTV live, MTV live concert stuff all the time.
Yeah, so we did something like that, a big MTV live event or whatever, so it is even televised. And I would love it if the Neon Maniacs got on stage as a band. I really want to embrace the rock and roll punk aspects that this movie has and failed to deliver on.
Even if they don't go on as a band, they go on stage and people think they're a band.
Yeah.
Because of the way they look.
Yeah, because, I mean, Gwar was around forever. We already had Kiss and makeup. So this just looks like a band and like horror makeup. And if we set this in October, because people were dressed up at this Battle of the Bands thing. So is this Battle of the Bands as a Halloween event? Great. You know, it
seemed like
fits.
It was.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you're right. And I did forget about that. Is that, yeah, they all were in costume, and that's why people weren't reacting right away. So you just sort of lean into that a little bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, and if you make it a Halloween movie, then, you know, you make it instantly 130% better.
Yeah. No, I just kind of want to take the stuff that they had and just make it better. There's lots of little great ideas here that never saw fruition anywhere. And unfortunately, most of the movies, this building of this romance that makes not a lot of sense between Steven and Natalie, rather than seeing the maniacs. So now we've put a lot of focus on the maniacs again. And I mean, the movie's called Neon Maniacs. We should be seeing the neon maniacs, and we don't have to overcomplicate it, but just enough to have it make a little more sense. The other things are the cops that are a little problematic, but yeah, it's a trope that was in the 80s, and we can maybe embrace that as well.
You know, and basically what we've been talking about is the Grant Morrison version of a slasher movie.
And I'm okay with that.
As am I. As Jay knows, I am a huge Morrison fan. So yes, I'm totally into that. And that's probably why I'm leaning into this so well. No, and I agree with Jay. The cops need to either be gone or be more useful. One of the two.
Wiley's barely on screen. I don't know what he does, but he should be the investigating officer, believing more and more of this as things are getting proven by Paula, who's basically investigating and finding out about all of these creatures. She's a horror enthusiast. She's making her own movies, does her own makeup. And I think initially she just wants to see it as inspiration for her makeup projects and maybe her class movies or whatever, student movies. I kind of want to just make her the same age as everybody else, but that'll be up to individual casting. But yeah, I do like that she's in horror. She's very much that Friday the 13th character. Was that Tommy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's Tommy, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I love the way that they sort of gave you little clues in the bedroom. Like you and I were talking about that via text there, because there was the Blade Runner where it's raining all the time in that movie.
Yeah, and then I spotted the Gremlins poster as well, the weakness to water of the Gremlins.
Yeah, and I do have to say, it almost seems like James O'Barr or Jay O'Barr took a little inspiration from this movie, because at the end of the movie, Steve's character says, well, it's got to stop raining sometime, right? And in The Crow, the line is, it can't rain all the time. So I almost wonder if there's a little inspiration there.
Makes me wonder. Somebody used it better.
And I mean, it's certainly a very similar type line.
Yeah.
And this movie does have a bit of a cult following, and I could see O'Barr being a fan of this movie.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, he was certainly inspired by the punk movement of the era as well.
Yeah, for sure. I just wanted to stick that in while it was on my mind. Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's great insight, actually. Yeah. Okay, well, we have our ideas for a remake, but we have some friends who have theirs as well. So let's cut to our friends at I Love This, You Should Too. And right after that, we'll get the Gargantua cast. And Drinking and Screaming will wrap it up by giving you a cocktail themed over Neon Maniacs.
My name is Indy Randawa.
And I'm Samantha Hees.
And we host a podcast called I Love This, You Should Too. Usually, we take turns bringing a movie to the other person, something that they will probably hate and haven't seen. But today's fun because we're doing something that neither of us have seen. And that's Neon Maniacs.
What did I just watch?
I don't know. It's like you watched Toxic Avenger mixed with Friday the 13th and a little bit of Village People in there as well.
Oh, you're being generous. I honestly could not get a feel for what this movie actually was. I think that some people might really enjoy this style of movie. I did not.
I enjoy a lot of it. I love campy 80s slashers. When this started, it looked like it was going to be fantastic. Fantastic in a terrible sense. But it looked like it was going to be a lot of fun, at least, because you had these ridiculous characters. We don't know their backstory yet, and they're just going around hacking people up.
Yeah.
It was poorly done for the most part, but it was fun. But then it gets a little boring.
It definitely slows down after the first, like, 20 minutes of the movie.
And a movie like this, you can be lots of things. You can be over the top, you can be poorly acted, but you can't be boring. That's kind of unforgivable in a campy movie. And there were a lot of stretches. Like when they played three songs back to back?
Yeah.
When you'd hear the same music in other sections as well, when the score would just keep repeating and nothing was really happening?
Yeah, I definitely think there were some things in this movie that could have been cut.
Now, it's probably clear to say that any movie like this, there were some production issues, but this one looks like they really had trouble because a lot of things don't match up. Mm-hmm. I wonder if they had two different units working at the same time to try to get it all done. But either way, this is a incongruous movie, is a nice way to say it, maybe.
Yes, definitely.
Now, we were both born in the 80s.
Yes.
80s were a big time for gook. There's a lot of gook in this movie.
I feel like I missed the gook generation.
There was, like, slime was a big thing. It's coming back with kids in over the last 5 years. Yeah. But there was a lot of movies that involved slime.
Ew.
Like Ghostbusters, the Nickelodeon stuff. You can't do that on television. Slime was ever present, I feel, in the 80s and early 90s.
True. That's very true. When you pointed out like that, gook was definitely a part of our childhood.
I think 85 to 95 was the golden era of gook.
Golden era of gook. I want a shirt that says that.
I think that's the tagline for Neon Mania.
I think so. The golden era of gook.
But for our dear friends over at Invasion of the Remake, we have been tasked to remake this movie. So, Samantha, I want you to pitch me your remake.
Okay.
We have some great source material, clearly. We have a movie that ends with a dinosaur in an interdimensional ambulance? Question mark?
Question mark. Heavy question mark. So it would be a serious, sexy teen movie.
Oh, Riverdale-esque?
Yeah. Yeah. We'll go like kind of dark, kind of sexy teens that are probably older than they actually need to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for Natalie, who's our main character, who doesn't process her friends being murdered very well.
No, they die and she just goes for a swim.
Yeah.
Whatever. No big deal.
I think I'd make that Amanda Seyfried. For Steven, the nerdy but nice, cute guy, I think I'd do Jay Baruchel.
Jay Baruchel.
Yeah.
I love it. I don't know. I just can't picture Jay Baruchel like not just being Jay Baruchel. But yeah, great.
I think
I'm on board. I will watch this movie.
Yeah,
but
okay.
It's serious, you say. It's not a comedy?
It's like serious, sexy, but I think that because his character is what it is, there are some like comedic moments for him. For Paula, the little girl who we thought was an 8-year-old boy at first, originally I said Kieran Shipka, who plays Sabrina, but then I decided Maisie Williams, who played Arya Stark.
Right, because she is also of an indeterminate age.
Yes, exactly.
Is she 8? Is she 34? I'm not sure.
I think she's like 25. So I'm going to go with Maisie Williams for Paula. And I felt like I needed to cast Lisa and her douchey boyfriend.
Right.
So for Lisa, I decided Amber Heard. And then for the douchey guy who dies, Chris Hemsworth, because I feel like he'd have a lot of fun with that.
Chris Hemsworth, is that Thor?
That's Thor.
Nice.
Yeah. Just because, like, I could see him, like, having a lot of fun with it.
He's an underrated comedic talent.
Mm-hmm.
And Thor is, like, one of the funniest characters.
Exactly. And he's, like, blonde and douchey, and I feel like he'd, like, really... Like, he's not actually douchey.
He might be. I don't know.
He might be. We've never met Thor. But I feel like he could play that really well. And then for Inspector Devon, who is the main cop, I would make it Ben Stiller.
Ben Stiller?
Yeah.
All right. And you're saying this is not a comedy?
Not a comedy.
Not a comedy, but it's Thor and Ben Stiller and Jay Baruchel.
Yeah.
But they're all straight. They're playing it straight.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's
big challenge.
That's my dream casting.
Wow. That was unexpected, erratic, But I'm on board. Well done.
Thank you.
I think you really surprised me with that cast.
Okay, I'm glad. So, Andy, what's your dream casting? Because I know you went the opposite way that I did.
So I was thinking about how to make this movie now. Like, do we want to make it all dark and gritty and take everything seriously? Nah, I don't think you can do that with this one. So I say we make it now, but we play it like it is 1986.
Okay.
So soundtrack is all hits from the 80s. We get...
That's a good soundtrack.
James Gunn to direct. Okay. James Gunn, of course, now does, like, Guardians of the Galaxy and stuff.
Oh,
but he used to be Slither and Scooby-Doo.
Okay.
So he has...
I can see this working. Yeah, okay.
And so originally I was thinking, like, well, we had to cast Natalie and Steven first. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, it'd be hilarious together because I'm not even going to try to make people of the appropriate age. Right. So just pick whoever I want.
Yeah.
We go Paul Rudd and Amy Poehler. And I thought they would be so funny together. And just as we were sitting down, I realized I think that because they were in They Came Together, which is a spoof as well.
Okay.
And then I looked at the rest of my cast and was like, oh, I just rewrote that movie as a horror. So I'm going to change it. And well, let's say Paul Rudd can stay because I'd love to see him front an 80s band.
I feel like he'd be really good in this movie.
And then let's put Ricky Lindholm in for Natalie.
Yeah. Okay.
Also too old, but you might know her from Knives Out, Last House on the Left, Garfunkel and Oates. And she's very funny. So yes. I think she would be a fun lead because this is all going to just be silly in my version of it. So for Inspector Devin, we go Sam Jackson.
Oh.
If I can get whoever I want, that's who I want.
Okay, okay.
And he could just yell the entire time, tired of these motherfucking neon maniacs in my motherfucking woods. Just a bunch of that. It'd be great.
I think it would be Under My Motherfucking Bridge.
Paula was an interesting decision because I needed someone who has the charisma both of a 42-year-old Sandra Bullock, yet also an 8-year-old boy who was miscast in Goonies. And, you know, there's only one person that could bring that kind of energy.
Who?
Ken Jeong.
Oh, my goodness.
So we go with Ken Jeong for Paula. If you're not familiar with him, he was probably most famous for the Hangover movies, but also Community, Crazy Rich Asians, lots of fun stuff. Then there are some side characters that I took a little bit of time to cast. There is a Sue and Wally. Sue, who famously is not on the pill. That's all we know about
her.
Oh,
yes, that's right.
And Wally, who burps out of anger. He, like, burps at people.
Oh, yeah.
So for those two... I was feeling what you were putting down with your sexy teen movie, and I'm going, KJ Apa, who plays Archie.
Archie!
But then for Wally, because KJ Apa plays a Sue character.
Yeah.
For Wally, the douchey guy, I'm going with, I think his name was Ross Butler, the original Reggie.
Oh,
from Riverdale. And
okay.
they're a couple together in my mind.
Okay, yeah. Are they both playing guys?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. No, yeah. I like that.
But, like, KJ Apa, like, sleeps around and then...
He's not even on the pill.
Yeah, he's not even on the pill. And there were some supporting cops. And I think this movie would be better suited as... It's kind of an investigation. So we start off with... We need to know where these neon maniacs come from.
Mm-hmm.
And since it's 1986, first I had them that they were workers at a Hypercolor t-shirt factory... But Hypercolor was more of a 90s thing, perhaps. So maybe they work at Sun Ice making neon ski jackets, right?
Oh, okay.
And then they have their staff Halloween party, and they all dress as the village people. Mm-hmm. And that's why they're wearing those costumes later. And then they fall into a vat of neon stuff, and that's what makes them the
maniacs.
Neon maniacs.
Yep.
If we want to cast all of those people, maybe the big guy is Tiny Zeus Lister. I think the caveman should be played by Will Forte. I think he could bring that energy.
You said you had someone in mind for that role, and that is exactly, yeah.
And then, I don't know, the samurai. How about Uma Thurman? Do we have the budget for her? Sure,
yeah,
why
we do.
Not?
We have any budget.
So then they all fall into a vat of neon stuff, and that's what makes them the neon maniacs.
Right.
And I think there should be two cops that are following this story, because we kind of get them, but they're never together.
Right.
And I think those two cops should be played by... A wild Jason Mantzoukas and a straight-laced Adam Scott.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, totally into that. Got
and then
it.
Also String Bean should be played by Hilary Swank.
What?
No follow-up questions on that one.
Okay.
So that is my reimagining of Neon Maniacs, a campy spoof of 80s slasher movies, but made today with actors far too old for the roles they're in.
Isn't that all teen movies, though?
Mostly.
I like that we both came up with very different movies.
Well, thanks, everyone. Back to you.
Hello, hello, Invasion of the Remakes. This is Chris of GargantuaCast. And if I were to remake this movie, The Neon Maniacs, I think one thing that it should be is a more tongue-in-cheek, self-aware, like, throwback to slashers. Honestly, sell itself as super friends with slasher villains. And, you know, it would be cool if it was a period piece. Like, you know, still in the 80s, still in San Francisco, and have that, you know, like, neon. Like, the 80s is always full of that neon aesthetic. And have the maniacs be much more colorful. Also, just have more defined themes and gimmicks. And also, the one thing about the original film, I think there's a big mistake that would be really great to include for this remake, hypothetical one, is either define their origin or don't give them an origin. The original film, like, it seems like it was like a half-ass origin. So, yeah, like, either define it or keep it a mystery. And, you know, you gotta keep some of them. You gotta keep the samurai, the doctor, the caveman especially. The one that really needs more love is the weird cyclops-looking guy, the weird lizard man cyclops with the hook. I feel some of them are redundant, like the cop, you know, because it's the maniac cop. And I feel like if this wants to stand on its own as a remake, do not reference any, like, the big slashers, you know, Freddy, Jason, and Leatherface, all those guys. If I had to choose a proper director to direct this, honestly, I think Michael Dougherty of Trick or Treat, Krampus, King of the Monsters, he would be as stellar. And yeah, and like, he can add that sense of humor, and he could work with, you know, an ensemble cast of not only the slashers, but our main protagonists. And he could also, he's such a huge love of that schlocky era, and I think he would be a perfect director for that. And honestly, have a Spectre Vision be behind it as well, because it seemed to have that neon aesthetic for their films, like Mandy and Color Out of Space. Yeah. If I had to pick a fan casting, definitely the main protagonist got to be Jessica Roth of Happy Death Day. She was the main character, Tree, because I feel like she can portray more of that tongue-in-cheek for this remake. You know, especially she is a funny actress. And for Doc, the monster kid, which, by the way, keep it a girl. That was a really cool idea. I say the perfect one would be Millie Bobby Brown. Like, I think she'll be perfect. And for the Neon Maniacs, honestly, you should just cast a bunch of suit actors and horror actors. Like, can you imagine Kane Hodder, Doug Jones, Robert Englund, Tony Todd? It's just so many. I think that would be so, so good as, like, this basically unofficial Avengers of slasher characters and slasher villains, but still hold on its own and not just be, you know, like, oh, it's Scream, but with multiple killers. But yeah, that's how I would remake it. Just keep it tongue-in-cheek, keep it in the 80s, because we're already obsessed with the 80s, and at least have a more focused plot. Like, who are these slashers? What do they want? Besides just murder and slaughter? Or keep it ambiguous to add more of that fear factor. And also, make sure they're not weak to water. That is stupid. I don't understand that. Remove that. Just, you know, have the characters be smart and not just Shyamalan logic, you know, like science and stuff. So yeah, that's how we make it. And this is Chris of GargantuaCast.
Hey there, listeners. I'm Char.
And I'm Kelly.
And we're so thrilled to join Invasion of the Remake in discussing the film Neon Maniacs from 1986 for All the Horrors 2020 event. We're from Drinking and Screaming, a horror movie review and analysis podcast where each week we create a cocktail to match the film's mood and themes while discussing it through a queer and feminist lens. And the first thing that I really want to talk about with Neon Maniacs is that I wish that Natalie had more of an actual personality in this film. I mean, she was just like a pretty final girl and it was like half naked all the time. The best part about her was her relationship with Steven, because that was actually well written. And Leleni Sorrell, who plays Natalie, actually is an excellent performer and she did a really good job. She's very believable, but her character had no substance.
I mean, that's kind of the flavor of Final Girls for these kind of movies, especially around this time.
Yeah, that's true. The 80s.
Yeah, the 80s were a different time where women didn't have personalities.
Yeah.
Women didn't, right? Women didn't develop personalities until around 2001, right?
Of course, of course.
Okay, good. I wasn't too sure about that. That's what media taught me, so.
Especially in film. Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Exactly. So if I've learned anything from film, it's almost everything. My big point that kind of stood out was all of the cultural appropriation in this movie.
Oh, what?
Yeah. Mm. All of the monsters were like indigenous people or like, what were some of the other ones?
There was like a samurai warrior.
The samurai. There was like, and it was all mixed. It was kind of like the village people of horror movies. There was a caveman in there for some reason. I mean, who was really selling it.
And they played a lot with the idea of mental illness, too.
Oh, yeah.
All the maniacs didn't really have, I mean, speaking of substance and personality, like, they didn't have anything going on for them, really.
No.
They had their outfits.
It was also weird that they were zombies, but also pretty, like, they had motivation and ideas and schemes and stuff.
But then they also couldn't talk.
No, it was it was manic, to say the least.
Another thing on our show, what we do is we make the cocktail. So I figured that we should make a cocktail for this. So
Do you want to?
I do want to. Okay. And I've already designed it for you. So you don't have to do any of the work, Kelly.
Oh, sick. I'm just going to sit back then.
But you can probably guess why I made it what it is. So I call it gunk.
Gunk.
Because that's how Paula says it to me.
You found some gunk?
Yeah. And of course, the drink has to be green, like neon green, like the gunk. Mm. So to make this cocktail, you'll need 1 ounce of green apple sourpuss, 3 ounces of a white wine of your choice, 1/2 ounce of orange liqueur, and an egg white.
To make that foam.
Hell yeah.
You got to shake it well with ice and strain it into a cocktail glass of your choice. Or like just a container that would store gunk.
Like a Ziploc baggie.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Which they picked up with plastic spoons.
Can I make a cocktail in a Ziploc bag? Am I allowed to do that?
I mean, we're doing it for this now, apparently.
Nice.
And then, of course, with joining Invasion of the Remake, we have to recast this film. And if I'm given the opportunity to do whatever kind of recasting I want, you best bet as an actor, I'm going to put myself in the fucking movie. So I'm going to be the horror film lover, Paula. I wanted to cast Gemma Moore, who played Gemma from Host on Shudder, as the final girl, Natalie, and Alfred Enoch, who plays Dean Thomas in the Harry Potter films, as Natalie's boyfriend, Stephen. Because this film is very whitewashed. I wanted to add some POC representation in there.
Can I make every maniac Batista?
Sure. I mean, I thought you were going to say, like, hire Guillermo del Toro to do the maniacs instead.
No, I want them as bad as they were.
Okay.
But I want them all played by Batista.
Do you want to do something else that we do in our show?
Yes. So we have a section called Da-na-na!
Scaredy Facts.
And this is where we tell trivia facts about the movie.
Oh!
Apparently this movie had a severe budget and production problem, and it actually brought the production to halt multiple times. At one point, for such a long period that much of the cast playing the maniacs had to be replaced due to most of them not returning because of other obligations.
Which there was even like in the credits, they had 2 people for some of them. Yeah, I saw that.
Mm-hmm.
At least they both got credited.
Yeah, that's good. Also, a lot of the script had to be cut or altered to save money. And the originally intended final battle between the protagonists and the maniacs was never filmed, thus leaving the film with its rather abrupt and inconclusive ending.
Which is totally, when we watched it, that was like the last thing you said, like, it's over?
I like looked up because I was on my phone for a sec and the credits were rolling and I'm like, wait, they didn't do anything. They didn't solve it. I guess the maniacs just kept killing in San Fran forever.
Yeah. Whatever. At least that mean cop guy got his comeuppance.
Mm-hmm.
That's something else we should have pointed out. This movie was so anti-cop and I loved it.
Which is good.
Paula was all like... And I was like, yes,
that was good. Also, he rode around on her bike and he's like, someone might steal it. Yeah, you fucking pig. You.
Thanks for having me. having us. And listeners, if you want to hear more from us, you can find Drinking and Screaming wherever you get your podcasts. We're currently halfway through our third season and have covered a wide range of films, including Hereditary, featuring an interview with the actress who played Charlie, Millie Shapiro, The Shining, and an episode on Shudder's Host, which featured an interview with the original cast.
That sounds good and worth listening to.
And remember, always scream responsibly.
Bye!
Bye!
Some great stuff there from I Love This, You Should Too, and you should subscribe to them. Pause moment and subscribe to them on their own show. Same with Drinking and Screaming and Gargantua Cast. All wonderful guests. Thanks for being on the show and bringing your insights to Neon Maniacs. You may never forgive us for making you watch this movie.
And I do want to say that Drinking and Screaming said thank you for getting to watch this. It was one of those so bad it's good movies for them.
Awesome.
And I just want to mention that two of our guests, I Love This, You Should Too, and Drinking and Screaming are Canadians. We have a big Canadian content on this week's episode.
Gotta get that CanCon.
We do, yeah.
Canadian content. We have it in spades.
Yeah, we're covered by the CRTC.
That's right. We actually meet CRTC criteria.
We do, and nobody else knows what that means except for our Canadian audience, but
that is okay. That was just for you. Now,
if our American audience wants to investigate, it's some stuff.
Now, do we have any last insights about Neon Maniacs that we want to add to our version of the film before we get to our casting?
I just wanted to point out just one last thing, and it ties in with the delay in the shooting, is Natalie's hair kept changing length. It was quite short in the beginning, and then it was quite long by the end, like in a 24, 48-hour period, or however long this movie supposedly took time over. It changed length quite a bit. I don't know why they didn't get her to cut it back to the length it was at the beginning of the shoot, because it was a really noticeable continuity issue.
Because maybe they didn't have the same hairdressers.
Yeah, maybe they were doing their own hair for all we know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, as far as Natalie goes, we need to make her a more human character or embrace the fact that she doesn't have an emotional impact, or she's like, all my friends died. I don't feel too bad about it. Either they suck or there's something really wrong with me.
And I was thinking, so instead of like shoehorning that romance in, we could almost make it that they're already dating and Steve's her beard.
She's
faking this relationship to make her friends and everybody think that she's normal when she knows she's not.
Yeah, maybe he can't be out on this outing, which is why he survives. And maybe in the final scene when he's trying to make a grab at her during a really inappropriate moment and the Neon Maniac's coming for her, the Neon Maniac finds her, she kills Steve and offers him up.
Yep. She offers him up and leaves.
And then leaves with the Neon Maniac.
I love that. I love when you do something like that where your hero is not a hero.
Yeah, because I think our hero is Paula.
I totally agree. She was by far the most interesting character in the movie, and she's the one who figures out what harms them.
Yeah
we don't need three people bringing the cops. Paula will be enough, and if she's got some sort of photographic or video evidence, hopefully that's enough to pull those guys in.
One note on the cops is you could also have a little twist of something where one of them is actually one of the people who the Neon Maniacs were there to recruit, because he's actually a notorious killer in his time as a police officer, if you wanted to go there.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'm still I don't know about the whole notorious killer. I mean, I kind of like the idea, but it gets overcomplicated at that point. But having somebody who's covering this up for them, and maybe he's a maniac himself.
Yeah, and then he's like on their side.
I like that part of it. That definitely gives the character more to do.
And it still makes him a killer, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, he's just very passable. Maybe we'll get a hint along the way where he's injured, and then we'll see the neon blood. But otherwise, he looks human, because there is a cop version here. There is a Neon Maniac that looks like Maniac Cop, which we don't need because that exists. So if we have a cop that looks like a cop but bleeds like a Neon Maniac, now we got something.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on board with that 100%.
Cool. Okay, well, let's get to some casting here. Hey, Jeff, you got some ideas? And if you're like me, you probably, like, there's way too many characters. These three or four people are important and the rest probably don't matter.
Yeah, that's where exactly. In fact,
to be honest, nobody really mattered. Well, do you got any ideas for casting here?
Well, actually thinking that as wacky as it would be, for everything that we've talked about, a great director would be James Gunn, I think.
He would have so much fun with this.
Yeah, because and then saying that, it would be really fun to have a movie where it starts off kind of like an atypical slasher movie, kind of like this one does, and then it just goes completely off the rails in a way that the original movie could never do. And yeah, I think James Gunn would be a good choice for that.
Absolutely.
Saying that, I do think that it would be fun to see Michael Rooker as a neon maniac. And if I was to think about other actors who, if you were to feature maniacs a tad more, who would just have fun in the makeup, I also think Christopher Maloney would be good.
Oh, nice.
And
He would have been great as a cop character.
Yeah, actually.
Lieutenant Devon.
You know what? Let's do that. Christopher Maloney is Lieutenant Devon.
Which would, as we've made him, he's still a maniac.
Yeah, exactly. And that would be great because he's played both on Law & Order SVU and Pappy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is another one of those movies. One of the tough things about remaking movies that are slashers with teenagers is if they were to be remade ever, 9 times out of 10, it would be with actors that you've never heard of. And, you know, kind of that comes up a lot, but with all the teen characters, that's definitely the case with this movie.
Yeah, I still kind of went with the young, still establishing themselves type of actors, like this movie did. They were just pulling from people who were just getting started.
Exactly. They probably recruited them straight out of theater class.
Yeah. And that's how they do it in horror, right? Is, I mean, you look at how many actors that are successful now started out doing B-horror. I mean, Jennifer Aniston, mm-hmm. Matthew McConaughey, Renee Zellweger are all great examples of movies that where they did these horror movies and are now huge stars.
Yeah, this really surprises me about like Donna Locke in this movie because she's actually quite good. She's very pretty. I mean, she's short, but she's very pretty, and I could have seen a very brilliant career out of this actress, but we never saw her again.
Making this movie probably turned her off.
No shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, because it sounds like it was probably one of the most challenging filming experiences in a movie that never was actually finished. Like, I can see that turning somebody off the acting career.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she's taking months and months and months out of her life, and then it doesn't even get released in a theater. Yeah. And she's been telling everybody that, you know, she's in this movie that's going to come out, and then it's only on video, and it's just embarrassing.
Yeah. And turns out to be terrible and incomplete. Yeah, that would probably not be something you want anybody to know. any more casting you got there? Sorry for cutting you off there.
No, you know what? This is a tough movie to cast for because
very difficult.
You know, the only characters that you would cast really are the maniacs. They're the characters that you remember. But the maniacs themselves are played by like sometimes four people to a maniac. Yeah. And then all the other characters get blown away pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think
they're not in it very much.
Yeah, I think for the maniacs, you're looking at very physical performers that we've never heard of. Mocap guys.
Wrestlers.
Wrestlers, stuntmen. Very bendy people too, maybe some that have physical deformities, maybe have lost limbs, so you can really play with the makeup some more. But overall, you're gonna have people who can do something physical and interesting with their bodies to be these maniacs, I think, if you want to shoot practically as much as you can.
And you do for something like this, I think.
I think so, too, because you kind of wanted to still, even if you're making it now and setting in the 80s, I think part of what making a movie set in the 80s looks like is by shooting it with an 80s intent.
I totally agree with that, yeah.
Okay, well, what do you got, Sam?
So I did cast Steve, Natalie, and Paula, and Lieutenant Devlin. So for my Steven, I cast Dylan Minnette because he's in a band.
Oh, nice.
So I went with him. Actually, when he's in his band, he has a very punky look. So I'm like, yeah, let him lean into that and have a little bit of fun with it. For my Natalie, and I like this even better now that we've gone with her kind of as a sociopath, I cast Lily Rose Depp.
Nice. Oh, okay. Yeah.
For my Paula, I did go younger, and I went with somebody who I know can play kind of the fun, smart-assy character. I went with Priya Ferguson from Stranger Things. She plays the little sister in season 3.
Cool.
So yeah, I thought she'd have a lot of fun with that. And then for my Lieutenant Devon, I went with Louis Guzman, because I think he'd be a lot of fun in that role, especially if we make him a maniac.
Like, yeah, and I think we kind of want to, in a movie like this, have horror comedy elements, because this is ludicrous, and you kind of want to have your audience having fun in this movie. So, yeah, he'd be really good in that part.
Yeah. And then for my director, I was thinking body horror, so I went with David Cronenberg.
Nice.
Now that with what we've done, I think that, yeah, we're really leaning into that body horror. So, yeah, I think that he'd be a great choice.
He might be too serious because there isn't a lot of humor in his stuff. But at the same time, he would grab on to the subversive themes of this movie.
Yeah, he would. And I think that he could do the humor with the right script if he had the right sort of inspiration for it. Because you look at him in Nightbreed and there's a lot of humor in there, even from his character.
Yeah, but he didn't direct that.
But he does have a sense of humor. So yes. I think that maybe he might relish the opportunity to do something fun like this.
Yeah.
And that was it for me.
Great. Well, that's some very good casting as well. Trish.
Hey there.
Hi.
Yeah, I didn't do a whole lot of casting on my end either, because it was like, I don't know.
At one point, I was considering not even casting. Like, what's the point?
Right? Because I'm like sitting there going like, yeah, like when you talk about Natalie, that's one reason I made her a sociopath, because she's just so empty. There's nothing to watch.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, I didn't know what to do.
Yeah, you literally could cast anybody you just saw on television right now, and they would be better than most of the people in this movie.
Yeah, I think some of it was direction, but I think some of it was like missing script. Man, if they just...
Oh,
like,
for sure.
But we've rounded it out, so we're good. So for Steve, I went with Jacob Bertrand, who's in Cobra Kai. Because I recently saw an interview with him, and he just seemed delightful. So,
and who was,
I thought we'll do that one.
Which character was he?
He plays Eli Moskowitz. He's the Mohawk.
Okay. Nice. I like that choice.
And then for Natalie, I went with Maitrey Ramakri. I can't pronounce it. She's in Never Have I Ever. Mm-hmm. She's like that young. She's youngish enough so that it really works.
Okay.
But I cast her as a sociopath. She had a more of a role when I cast this, but I still think she'd be really interesting in it.
Mm-hmm.
For Paula, I went with Quvenzhané Wallace from Beasts of the Southern Wild, because she's now like 17 and about the right age for that. And then I didn't cast the cop. I just sort of had Andrew Divoff as just like a bum who kind of knows what's going on, but he could be the cop. I don't know. I do like your cop stuff. Like Christopher Maloney, I can't do better than that for the cop.
Yeah, I'm like, damn. That's way better than what I got.
Absolutely.
But I didn't know what that character was going to be yet.
But I do want an Andrew Divoff in there at some point. And then for the director, I want John Carpenter because I just wanted to score it.
Oh, man. Nothing says 80s than that kind of synth that he does so well. Like, even if he didn't direct it and just scored it, I would have been so happy. This movie, as is, would have been 1,000 times better with his score.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Could you imagine a Cronenberg Carpenter team up with soundtrack and direction?
Yeah, I am now.
Oh, I got shivers. I literally got shivers.
Please make that happen. Please make that happen. We always seem to get like our horror actors together, but can we get some of our classic directors together and create some fucking magic before they die? That would be amazing. Amazing.
Anybody in power who's listening, please.
Well, I went
with John. Just talk to each other, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, I went with a more younger, still establishing cast, at least for the kids. For Natalie, I went with Jessica Belkin. She's still establishing herself, but she was a recurring character in season 5 of American Horror Story, so she's a horror alum as well, and kind of has the look we're going for, and might be able to do the menace that we need, as we're now establishing that she's a willing maniac. Cameron Brodeur is my Steven. He plays young Luther on Umbrella Academy. Ooh. So he's kind of thin but tall, so we're still playing into that he was a bit of an outsider in this film, but in our version doesn't quite fit anymore, but that's okay. We can just make him part of the gang. For my Paula, and I kept her the same age. All these guys are around 18 these days. I went with Sadie Sink from Stranger Things because she's got a lot of spunk and attitude. And nice. That's something I kind of want to keep in our Paula. Now, for my Lieutenant Devon, mainly because I wanted a famous cop character, so I went with David Caruso.
Oh, that's kind of fun too.
I just wanted it as somebody who's known as a cop playing a cop character. And he hasn't actually acted since CSI Miami, and I'd like to bring him back for a one-off just for the hell of it. And he could play that menace if we're now establishing that he is an undercover maniac.
Now I'm imagining he's like going, are you saying they're maniacs? with neon blood? Are they neon maniacs? And then he
puts on his sunglasses because.
Wow!
Yeah. Trust me, I was imagining that moment too.
I love it. I absolutely love Caruso because his oddly stiff form way of acting is just perfect for somebody who's not really human.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, I did want Lieutenant Wiley, or I don't even know what his rank was, the other detective, Wiley, to have a more prominent role because I felt like they were building something with him, but it never transpired on screen. We got a phone call with him in bed, so with his wife, and there was another one, a couple with him in the room with Devin, but he's the investigating officer, so I want him working a little more closely with Paula a little bit as he's finding out that this shit is real and he's doing something to try to solve this problem, and Lieutenant Devins keeps not believing him, now we know why, and keeps blocking his intentions of stopping the neon maniacs. So this becomes a very important and heroic role because, as we've established, Paula's going to be our final girl. So now we need a heroic male character in here as well. He can live, he can die, but he's got to do it heroically. And there's an actor who I've really taken to. I think he's going to be for great things. And this will also solve some of our whitewashing problem in this movie. Aldous Hodge from Hidden Figures.
Ooh, nice.
That's my cast for my director. I went with he's still relatively unknown, but I wanted to embrace some of the weirder aspects of this movie. And this guy had directed a movie called Wasting Away, otherwise known as Zombies. And that is Matthew Coman. In that zombie movie, he was kind of making a zombie movie from the point of view of the zombies. So this group of people, they're in a bowling alley, and the world's gotten really weird and out of sync with them. Like, everything's really fast and they're like, what the fuck is going on? So they're just hiding out in this place and bowling and socializing, trying to duck out. And when it breaks the real world, it goes black and white. And turns out like all these people are zombies and we're seeing it from their perception. So when it goes black and white, we kind of get into a more Romero-esque zombie movie moment, and then we flip back to them. And I'm like, well, that's really interesting and weird, and highly recommend it for your 31 Days of Horror lists. So I thought, you know, this guy might be able to play with the weirder aspects of this, and could be a good establishing film for a director who's still establishing himself.
And also very good if he's creating your perception of what the maniacs are experiencing. Like, he's got what he needs to do to make you understand where they're coming from.
Well, I like that idea because, I mean, we were talking about, like, you want to like the monsters a little bit because, I mean, when you think about sort of your favorite horror films, it's the monster that you're attracted to, right? So Pinhead, Jason, Freddy.
Yeah, you think about the really big 80s franchises, you're ultimately usually rooting for the bad guy.
Well, you're rooting for the final girl, but you're also really, really interested in what, in the bad guy, in the quote-unquote monster.
Yeah.
Right? Well, and nobody goes into a Friday the 13th movie giving a shit about the teenagers.
No, of course not.
No,
you're right. They're more interested in what the monster's going to do and what the monster is. Because when you consider that you have characters like Jason and Michael that never speak, but people still relate to them and are fascinated by them.
Yeah.
Right? And the maniacs are very similar in that sense because they, at least in the original movie, they didn't speak. We're giving at least one a speaking role in our remake, but you want them to be engaging without having to speak. And I think that's a good way to do it. So I'm with Jay, basically, is what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
Back to Rad, as it were.
And I've got to watch this movie now. You've made a very good case for it.
But. Yeah, I stumbled on it a few years ago, the early days of Netflix, and I only rediscovered, because I could never remember the name of that movie, and it took me a while to rediscover what the name of the movie was, because I was really fascinated by it. It was quite an interesting film. All right, thanks. Well...
Yeah, well, you did say it had two names, so that could be why.
Well, that was Wasting it. And try looking for zombies. Well, how did they spell that? Is it ARG or is it ACK? Like, fuck.
How many H's?
How many A's?
How many A's?
Yeah. So I could never find it even if I could remember it. So, and I had no idea it was called Wasting Away. It was the other title. So, but yeah, if you can find it, it's maybe worth adding for your little break with some horror comedy. It was quite fun. And you can join us on your 31 Days of Horror challenges. We're watching 31 horror movies over 31 days, and we're going to report back to you in early November with what we watched. And they all have to be horror movies we've never seen before. And if you're joining us on that challenge, make sure you get your lists to us right away, and we'll try to read some on the air when we report back to you with our lists.
And it's fun to find out what other people have been watching, too. Sometimes mm-hmm. they match up in a very weird way. It's creepy and fun.
Mm-hmm. Always fun to do. And this episode was an all-the-horror episode for 2020. There's daily podcasts dropping every single day for this month of October through All the Horror. And you can follow All the Horror on Twitter at AllTheHorror18. And of course, they also have Facebook and Instagram accounts as just as All the Horror. And their website, Sam,
is allthehorror18.wixsite.com/event.
And they will tell you exactly which shows are dropping which days, the schedule's there, and you can follow all of these crossover episodes all month long. And we are so happy to be a part of this again this year. It's always a lot of fun. We look forward to doing it. We've always done big horror stuff for the month of October, and it's nice to have everybody else join us in on the fun. You guys have over at All the Horror have established something really special here that's has never been done in podcasts before, and we're happy to be in the ground floor of it and for the third year in a row.
Yeah, it is our third year.
So yes. Awesome.
Yeah, and let's not forget that last year we introduced our charity Scares That Care. This year we're really, really pushing for them. If you buy merchandise from the All the Horror store, all the profits or proceeds that we receive go directly to Scares That Care. So get a tee, get a mug, get a mask, get a sticker. Every little bit makes a difference. And we get to support a great charity, and you get some cool swag to go with it, too.
Yes.
Absolutely. So win, win, win.
Once you've supported them, support us, too. Tell somebody about the show. That's free. Easy enough mm-hmm. to do. We're in a ton of different places. You say, hey, I'm listening to this great show, Invasion of the Remake. You should, too. And talk to Siri. Subscribe me to Invasion of the Remake. Or just search us out on your favorite podcast platform. We're probably there. We're everywhere.
Yeah.
Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and apparently Amazon Music. We can't find it, but some people are. If you can find a link for it, send it to us, because I can't find us. But I'm seeing the downloads.
We're lost. Help.
So help us find the link so we can put it on our website. But we know we're there. I've set it up, but I can't find it for the life of me, but other people are, because I'm seeing the downloads. So I don't know where this Amazon Music and Audible podcast portal is, but maybe it's just not set up here in Canada yet on our apps. But we're there. If you can find us, great. If not, tons of different places. No big. You can find us, and you can find us on our website, Sam.
invasionoftheremake.wixsite.com/podcast.
And he's put a little button there to our Invasion store, and yeah, you can click that button for t-shirts, mugs, posters, etc. There's great stuff for 31 Days of Horror. If you're doing the challenge with us, you think you deserve a shirt because you survived 31 Days of Horror, and there's three great designs for I Survived 31 Days of Horror. Are you that person that was in that thing that one time? You can have that shirt. There's some great Angry Fish t-shirts. Yes. If you missed that episode, go back in our archives. But Angry Fish is a thing now. And some of his iconic movies are over on our TeePublic. They are cute and they are awesome. And we still have the Jeff Omega collection. We think we're going to drop that around Christmas time. They're really cool as well. I can't wait for you to see them. So grab yourself a t-shirt, a mug, a mask, and look really cool supporting your favorite podcast. But go support the All the Horror charity first, because that's going to a really good cause. But we're a good cause too. Mm-hmm. You're helping keep more
earballs
on our show. And a special thanks to I Love This, You Should Too. Go subscribe to them on your favorite podcast platforms, Gargantua Cast and Drinking and Screaming. go subscribe and support these shows that guested on ours. Thank you again for guesting on Neon Maniacs. All right. Well, that was Neon Maniacs. And would you guys say like that was maybe one of the weirdest ones we've done since Hard Rock Zombies? Maybe?
Absolutely.
Oh. I don't know if it was necessarily weird more than... When I was watching it, I was thinking, how have I never heard of any of this before?
It was, well, not weird in the sense of like weird, like Hard Rock Zombies, but weird in the sense that it was so broken up and hard to follow. Like Hard Rock Zombies was like this. It took a long time for you to sort of figure out what was actually happening.
At least we know with this one, it was just because it was incomplete.
Yeah.
We're not watching a full film. We're kind of watching a reel and a raw cut of what you shot. And couldn't afford to go back and do some reshoots to fill it out.
Well, I found with this one, it was sort of one of those things where you notice and you see a little nugget of an idea. Like I could see what some of the grand ideas they had. And it was so funny. In my heart, I'm like rooting for them. I'm like, you can do it. You can make something.
There's a really brilliant, cheap special effect that they did. And I don't know if it's effective or not, but it was certainly creative where they just took like a fake skeleton and attached cotton candy to it. So when it got wet, it melted in these funky colors.
Yep.
It was brilliant. It's cheap.
Absolutely.
In the budget. I thought that was a really neat idea. And it's that kind of DIY attitude that got this movie eventually finished, but I can see why such a problematic shoot would scare a lot of people off on doing this again.
Yeah.
The director never directed it again. He stuck to cinematography and had a great career in cinematography. Some of these actors went on to continue acting. Others did not. You know, you have a bad experience on set and you go, oh, this is the life of this. This is, oh boy. And I've been on some pretty shitty shoots that make me not want to do it again. And then I've been on some good shoots that were great. And even the shitty ones, when you finally get a final product, it's like, oh, that's finally made all that suffering worthwhile. But there's certain kind of crazy that goes into making a film, and there's the stars got to align just to make it all happen. And I think a lot of people take that for granted, and so much this year, because lots of big movies keep getting pushed into, we're not going to see most of the big movies that were slated for this year until next year, maybe. And now it's even getting even less viable for all these big screen movies to come out. A big distributor, a big theater chain just announced their closure this year, just a few days ago. It'll be about 2 weeks when you hear this, but that's close to like 750 theaters that are going to be closing across the US and Europe.
Which chain is that?
That chain was Cineworld. And it is shuttering 543 Regal cinema venues in the U.S. and 128 cinemas across the U.K. and Ireland.
Oh, Regal cinema is pretty nice.
And this is right after James Bond had been recently moved into next year. So that announcement came without these big productions. And that's a really big theater chain that's taken a huge chunk out of the theatrical market and making it even harder for when these movies open to make money. So my theory, unfortunately, of a $200 million movie not being viable is starting to come to pass. And maybe the theaters are going to become very niche and very expensive to go to just to stay afloat. Oh, well, I mean, yeah, they're expensive now, but they're going to, I think those ticket prices are going to be akin to concert tickets soon, just to even be viable. I don't know what the solution is, but
we need intermissions. The long movies, intermissions, you sell double the snacks. People love it. And the snacks we know you have the biggest markup on.
That's true. If you feel confident enough to go to the theater, support your theaters, but we could be looking at a new distribution model happening in the next few years, and I don't know what that's going to look like, but unfortunately it's very scary for the future of cinema right now. But I don't want to depress you too much about that, so we're going to keep talking about movies all month long, especially these horror movies. We got another comparison for you next week. It's going to be a lot of fun, and we're going to have some more guests coming in on our final week of October, and then we lead into our 31 Days of Horror in early November as well, and then we're going to have a nice long string of episodes about what we watched over the 31 days of October. It's going to be a lot of fun. We've still got a lot of horror in the tank. Until then, I've been Jason.
I am always Sam.
I continue to be Trish.
And I always return as Jeff Omega.
And we are out of here.
Hi, Natalie. Hello, Lisa. What's up, everybody? Oh, has anybody seen my dog?
Very funny, Steven. Would you please get him out of here, please?
I'm sorry, he just gets a little excited.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I can see. What's his or her name?
Dog.
You named your dog Dog?
See, I thought about Cat, but